I knew I was smarter than you guys. So I'm not very good at disguising myself. I can't really, you know, when you get 6'5", you can't really cover yourself up anymore, you know? Like, I guess what I could do is, like, maybe put, like, a big, you know, bunch of leaves on my head and pose as a tree or something, you know? Other than that, though, I can't really cover myself up that well. I'm not too good at disguising. How many of you guys ever get dressed up for Halloween or anything? A few of you guys. I remember one time at a church event that my mom took us to, you know, because I kind of have a history with not being able to disguise myself very well. My mom made me a crayon costume for our harvest festival, okay? Here's a picture. That's me and my sister. She's a ballet and I'm a crayon, okay? So as you can tell, I kind of have a history with not being able to disguise myself very well, as I proved it this morning. Not once did you guys really think that President Bush was in the room, you know? I'm sure you guys weren't like, oh no, where's the Secret Service? Why aren't they with President, you know, or whatever? When I was dressed up as a crayon, not one time did somebody be like, oh man, I was looking for something to write with and try to pick me up and, you know, write with me, you know? No, that didn't happen. I wasn't disguised very well. That's just how I am, all right? I can't disguise myself very well. We're going to see this morning, though, that Satan is really good with disguises. Sin in particular. You guys have seen it. You guys have seen it through the beginning of our study in the book of Genesis. He disguised outright rebellion and disobedience as something that looked appealing. Do you guys remember what it came in the form of in the Garden of Eden? What it was disguised as? Okay, so he came as the serpent, disguised as a serpent, but what specifically was appealing to Eve that she knew was wrong? The fruit, exactly. So it was disguised as something that looked really appealing, but she knew that to eat of it was completely wrong. And this is a tactic that Satan uses all the time. Before the flood, he used adultery, murder, all of these terrible things, and he disguised them as looking like something appealing and something good. He'll continue to use that throughout the rest of the Bible when you read it, throughout the rest of our lives. Even at the end of the world, he will use a guy known as the Antichrist who will come and he will disguise him as a hero and as a peacemaker, and the whole world, many, many people, thousands, millions, billions of people will follow this guy because they're fooled by the disguise. So I want to challenge you guys this morning. We're going to look at some issues of sin. And I want you guys to be thinking about what areas in your life you have been fooled by the disguise of sin. Okay? Because a lot of times sin looks really appealing. I'll tell you that real honestly. But I love that the Bible is real honest because it pulls Satan's disguise off. He likes to disguise himself. It doesn't work. Check out this verse from 1 Peter 5:8. It says, Be self-controlled and alert. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Now, a lot of people have their own different take on what the devil is like. You know, you guys have probably heard people say, I know I have, oh man, I can't wait to go to hell. It's going to be like a big party, you know? All my friends are going to be there. I'm going to like hang out with Satan. It's going to be sweet. Rock on, right? They'll tell you. And they have the complete wrong idea of Satan. The Bible says he's like a roaring lion on the prowl, ready to munch somebody. He's looking, he's hungry, for breakfast. And he's looking for lives to destroy. But you know how a lot of people treat Satan? Not like he's a lion, like he's a cute little kitty cat. You know, like, oh, look how cute. And then, oh, I want to pet him. You know, I want to get close. Oh, rah! And he just munches them. Takes advantage of them getting close to him. And he ruins people's lives. That's what Satan does. We learned last week that God saves people. We learned this week that Satan ruins people. Because sin is everywhere you look, and it's dressed up, and it's disguised as something attractive or appealing. But sin is not that. Sin brings death. Sin separates us from God. It sends people to hell. And it sends God's judgment. We've seen that through the flood. God's judgment on sin. And you would think that an event as catastrophic as the flood would teach these people a lesson, wouldn't you? I mean, water shooting up out of the crust of the earth. Millions of people die on the earth except for 8 people and about 7,000 animals on an ark. You would think that that kind of judgment and punishment would teach them an unforgettable lesson. But as we're going to see today, sin is still very present. And sin is still destroying lives. Now, let me warn you. We're in chapter 9 this morning in Genesis. We're going to read verses 18 through 21 here in just a minute. Now, for the last couple weeks, Noah has been the hero of our story. Today, you'll probably think of him in a little different light. Because the Bible is so honest that even its heroes, it doesn't cover up their mistakes. And our chapter today, I guess if you were going to put a rating on it, would be rated R. Okay, check this out. Genesis chapter 9, verse 18. You're like, my mom, I don't think my mom would... No, it's okay. All right? Verse 18. Now the sons of Noah who went out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Nice names. Can you imagine being named Ham? Where's Turkey, you know? His brother. Ham was the father of Canaan. These three were the sons of Noah, and from these the whole earth was populated. Here we go, verse 20. And Noah began to be a farmer, and he planted a vineyard. Then he drank of the wine and was drunk, and he became uncovered in his tent. So Noah is drunk and naked now in his tent. All right? We'll just get that out in the open there. The Bible's pretty honest, isn't it? You would think that Noah, being a godly man, being the hero of the story, in any other literature, they would have covered this up. Oh, no, we can't put that. We don't need people to know that Noah went through that, you know. But the Bible is very honest, and it talks about the heroes of the stories. They're good things, but it also talks about the bad parts. You know, we found out just a couple chapters ago, chapter 6, that in God's eyes, Noah found grace. But man, now this morning in our eyes, Noah finds gross, right? Like, what is he doing? What has happened to this guy? He's completely in a different position than we ever thought we'd see him. It says he gets off the ark. Maybe this was 100 years, 200 years after the flood. Gets off the ark. Eventually he starts planting stuff, growing crops. One thing that he plants and grows is a vineyard. Has all these grapes. So eventually he harvests the grapes, then he makes some wine, and then he just gets hammered, all right? This guy just gets plastered, drunk, and passes out naked in his tent, all right? That's where we find him in this story. Now, there's lots of different arguments about whether or not Noah meant to get drunk, if it was on accident. Bottom line is, Noah is drunk, and that's where he is. And it's because of that that there's a lot of bigger mistakes and bigger decisions and bigger consequences down the road. But let me just kind of take you on a sidetrack here real quick, just real briefly about alcohol, drugs. If you haven't noticed, immorality and alcohol often go hand in hand. Because when you begin to drink, when you begin to alter your mind in this way, you begin to act ways that you never thought you would act. You do things that you never planned to do. Let me read you a little bit about what the Bible has to say about it. Proverbs chapter 23. These are good verses to write down in case somebody ever asks you, hey, what's the Bible have to say about drinking or alcohol or drugs or something, okay? Proverbs 23, verses 29 through 35. Who has anguish? Who has sorrow? Who is always fighting? Who is always complaining? Who has unnecessary bruises? Who has bloodshot eyes? It is the one who spends long hours in the taverns or the bars, trying out new drinks. Don't let the sparkle and smooth taste of wine deceive you. For in the end, it bites like a poisonous serpent. It stings like a viper. You will see hallucinations, and you will say crazy things. You will stagger like a sailor tossed at sea, clinging to a swaying mast. And you will say, they hit me, but I didn't feel it. I didn't even know it when they beat me up. When will I wake up so I can have another drink? That is the story right there of a person who lives with alcohol. It's a downward spiral. They don't know what's happening. They drown their sorrows away by drinking. They wake up and they say, oh man, get me another drink. And it's a downward spiral. Let me just warn you that it's a dangerous trap to fall into. But Satan is pretty good at making it look appealing these days, isn't he? Alcohol. It just looks fun. You know, in the commercials, they're having pool parties and they're, oh, it just looks like a blast and everybody's having a good time. It doesn't show the statistics of people killed by drunk drivers or people that died because of alcohol poisoning or their livers shut down. Whatever it may be, it doesn't tell all the consequences. It shows it looking really good. So I could go on today all about how bad alcohol is for you and you shouldn't do it. Bottom line is, Bible says don't do it. Don't do it. But that's not exactly where the focus of the text is this morning. The focus of the text here, although Noah made this huge mistake, is actually on a decision that was made by one of his sons. Because Noah's bad decision led to our first point. Number one, a bad decision with a big consequence. Let's look in Genesis chapter 9, verse 22. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers outside. Verse 23, but Shem and Japheth took a garment, laid it on both their shoulders, and went backward and covered the nakedness of their father. Thank you. And their faces were turned away, and they did not see their father's nakedness. So Noah awoke from his wine and knew that his younger son had done to him. Then he said, cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants he shall be to his brethren. And he said, blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant. May God enlarge Japheth, and may he dwell in the tents of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant. So for some reason, one day, Ham decides to head to his dad's house. He was probably living on his own. He was married, we know that, before he even got on the ark. So Shem, Ham, and Japheth, they were probably all living apart from their dad. One day, all of a sudden, Ham says, hey, I should head over to my dad's house. He walks over there in the wrong place at the wrong time, all right? He walks in, he's like, oh my goodness, you know? Probably never expected to see something like that. But his reaction is the key. Because he could have been loving and done what he could to make sure that his dad's sin was not just gone and told about and everybody knew about it. But instead, it says in verse 22 that he went outside. Well, it says he saw the nakedness of his father and he told his brothers. That was the key right there. He decided, oh man, I got to tell somebody about this. And he ran outside and he began to gossip, rebel against his father, disrespect his dad. I don't know why he did this. I don't know why he reacted this way. Maybe he had a grudge against his dad. Maybe he was finally glad to see that his dad wasn't perfect, you know? I mean, Noah had found grace in the eyes of God. I'm sure that he had some pretty high morals and standards. Maybe he was glad to finally see that he was human too. I don't know what it was, but for some reason, he reacted in a rebellious, disrespectful way. Now, when alcohol is involved, people often get themselves in very embarrassing situations, right? I remember a situation involving alcohol where I was, and of course I wasn't the one that was drunk, but I was in the Taco Bell drive-thru when I got rear-ended by a drunk driver, okay? As if it was hard to navigate through the drive-thru. But it ended up with me like taking her keys away from her, pulling her car around, calling the cops. She ended up getting in a fight with a guy in the parking lot somehow. And one push, he pushed her and she tripped over a parking block and fell on her face on the asphalt. She probably didn't even remember half of it because she was so plastered from her drinks. You get yourself in pretty embarrassing situations. I also read about a 23-year-old guy. He invited some friends. They lived in Europe. He invited some friends over. They were watching a magic show on TV. On the magic show, this guy was doing sword swallowing. You guys have probably seen that before on TV or something like that. And so they begin to argue about how this guy was doing it. And so this 23-year-old guy is like, hey, guys, I can do that. I'll show you. And everybody's betting on it. Okay, but they're drinking, all right? They're getting drunk, also betting on sword swallowing. Not a good combination, okay? Check this out. He swallowed a knife with an 8-inch blade, some nails, some spoons, and some clothespins. Okay, come on. That's what happens when you're drunk. You start swallowing weird things, you know, and getting in fights. And, you know, you wake up and you don't really know what happened. This guy woke up with a sore throat and 30 stitches in his abdomen. Like, oh, man, what happened? And he couldn't even remember that he had swallowed an 8-inch sword and some spoons and nails and clothespins. What's he doing? Is he a goat or something, you know, just munching on stuff? But that's what happens. Alcohol takes you, causes you to do things that you would never had thought to do. And that's where Noah is. But no matter why it happened, Ham reacted in the wrong way. No matter what happens with one of our friends or our family members, our job is not ever to go and tell everybody else. 1 Peter 4:8 says, "And above all things, have fervent love for one another, for love will cover a multitude of sins." It will cover them up. Now, that doesn't mean hide it like a scandal, but it means not going out and telling everybody. And that's exactly what Shem and Japheth did. They were the smart guys. Ham came out, "Hey guys, oh man, this is so funny. You guys got to go into dad's tent." And they're all, "No thanks, what's going on?" Eventually they found out. So they walked in backwards, grabbed a robe, and covered him up. They loved him enough that they would not disrespect him even when he was in sin. They weren't going to do it. So thank God for those guys. Set the good example. Eventually, Noah wakes up, finds out what Ham did to him. Not a good thing. And that's why verses 25 through 27 are a prophecy. It's not necessarily a curse straight from Noah or a blessing straight from Noah. It's a prophecy through Noah from God. And he curses Ham and his descendants, specifically Canaan. And he says, Canaan is going to be a servant of all servants. And he says, Shem and Japheth will be blessed. And we can read about these all throughout the rest of the Old Testament. Deuteronomy and Leviticus describe the Canaanites, these descendants of Canaan, as godless, wicked, idolatrous, superstitious people. But then the family of Shem would go on to be the Shemites, or later the Semites, which would be God's chosen people. So you can see how this prophecy was straight from God. And the Canaanites were cursed because of Ham's decision, but Shem and Japheth were blessed because of their decision. So Ham made this bad decision, and it had a big consequence. Now let me remind you this. Almost all of Satan's targets of temptation were destroyed in the flood. But the tempter himself was not. Satan is still hard at work ruining people's lives. And he's really, really good at it, actually. Now, chapter 10, we're actually just going to read a few verses out of there. It's a list of names. It's got, you know, just families and different lines of where people came from. You know, the Bible, all throughout the Bible, there's different places to find cool names. Like if, you know, when people are having a kid, sometimes they'll turn to the Bible to look for a name, you know. They find names like, you know, Philip and John and Matthew. Genesis chapter 10 is not usually probably the place that they look, all right? Check this out. Verse 2, the sons of Japheth were Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, and Tyrus. The sons of Gomer were Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarma. Can you imagine if your parents are all, "Huh, let's see, what's a real biblical name? How about Arphaxad? Oh, yay, little baby Arphaxad, you know? Oh, Sabteca. Oh, what a great name, you know?" Or they just run through here and just pick up any name. Probably not usually the place that you would turn. But although it seems like a boring list of names, it's actually a very accurate historical document. Genesis chapter 10 is known as the Table of Nations. And it stands alone from any other source being the most accurate and the most comprehensive. We can look back to Genesis chapter 10 and today look at all the people all over the world and see whether they came from Shem, Ham, or Japheth. It's a very accurate document. So though, although it may seem like a boring list of names, it holds very significant historical significance. But we're just going to focus on one main character here in Genesis chapter 10. Because he was number two, a bold leader with a bad craving. Look at chapter 10, verse 8. Cush begot Nimrod. Also probably not a name that you'd want to name your baby. Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, Calneh, in the land of Shinar. Verse 11, from that land he went to Assyria and built Nineveh, Rehoboth, Calah, and it goes on and on about the kingdoms that he built. Now, leaders are great when they're leading in the right direction. Speaking of leaders with a bad craving, I had a dream last week. We went on the winter retreat, all right? Now, when you guys are normally on the slopes at the winter retreat, what do you guys think it is the youth pastor's job to be doing if he's not on the slopes? What do I usually do when you guys are having fun? Okay, I'm maybe taking pictures, maybe studying for teaching that night, you know? Maybe I'm booking rooms or just making sure events go correctly. Well, not me, all right? Because in this dream, you guys were on the slopes, and I went on a spree of robbing 7-Elevens, okay? Robbing 7-Elevens. Your youth pastor, hey guys, go have fun snowboarding, you know? And while I'm packing my gun in my backpack, right? And so everybody was freaking out, like, oh man, there's a robber on the loose. And I was all, maybe we should get together and pray about that, you know, or I don't know, something. And it was me the whole time. I was the robber. Now imagine, that's a terrible leader, all right? I would not have a job very long once I got back to Albuquerque and they found out that I was robbing 7-Elevens on the winter retreat. You know, your parents are all, hey, how was the winter retreat? Was it great? Yeah, it was awesome. Kevin told us, like, how to hold the gun and aim at the 7-Eleven person's head, you know, and, oh, it was awesome. We got lots of money and Slurpees, and it was great. Of course, that would be terrible. I would be a leader leading in the wrong direction. Nimrod is that. First of all, he's just got a crazy name, Nimrod, but he also kind of acts like a Nimrod. His name means rebel. And as he grows, he becomes a very powerful, rebellious leader. You guys may remember in Genesis chapter 9, in the beginning, verse 1, God says to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. In other words, spread out. Don't stay in one location. But rebelling against that was his idea. Chapter 11 fits inside chapter 10, right around verse 8. So as you're reading through it and all these list of names, right when you get around verse 8 and you read about Nimrod, that's when the Tower of Babel began construction. Look over at chapter 11, verse 1. Now the whole earth had one language and one speech, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, and here's the rebellious part, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. Direct rebellion against God's command. Now, don't get me wrong. I'll bet this tower was amazing. They spared no cost. They bought the best materials, the most durable materials. People probably came from all over the world if they were spread around that far to see this incredible tower. But verse 4 shows their motives. It says, let us make a name for ourselves. And that's exactly what they did. They got famous, I'm sure. And this probably happened a few years after the flood. By this point, there were probably a few hundred thousand people on the face of the earth as it had begun to be repopulated. Now, let me ask you this, pop quiz. What happened the last time hundreds of thousands of people rebelled against God? The flood. Yeah, remember all that water that destroyed millions of people? That's what happened when hundreds of thousands of people rebelled against God last time. And now they're doing it again. They have already turned their backs on God and begun to do whatever they wanted to do. They've let the disguise of sin fool them. Maybe you guys have seen these billboards. I like this one. It says, "Don't make me come down there," from God. And I wonder if that's maybe what God was thinking here in chapter 11. Let's read verse 5. "But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, 'Indeed, the people are one, and they all have one language, and this is what they begin to do. Now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech.' So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore its name is called Babel," which means confused, "because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth." Number three, this decision to rebel led to a big mess with a bunch of confusion. Think about how messy this must have been. Think about the confusion that must have been going on here. One guy's like, "Hey, bring some bricks up here." Another guy's like, "What is that guy saying?" You know? All of a sudden, they're trying to build, and now every single person trying to build speaks a different language than anybody else. Can you imagine if the people all around you couldn't understand you because you guys spoke different languages? God may have changed as many languages as there are people in this room this morning. Can you imagine that? Speech is such a great gift, but we often take it for granted. We don't realize how easy it makes things. Imagine if I had to get up here and teach in charades to you guys. Can you imagine how hard that would be? You know, it would be impossible, right? You guys wouldn't learn a thing. "I don't know, Mom. He said something about five and Bibles, and I don't know what he taught about," you know? It'd be really hard to learn. But pretty quickly, these people must have gotten frustrated and just left, you know? Instead of trying to build with bricks, they probably tried to kill with bricks and just ran around chucking bricks at each other, you know, so mad that nobody could understand what they were saying. And eventually, all the people who were able to communicate with each other got together and started their own community. You realize what's happened here? God made a command. He wanted it to happen. It didn't happen. And so he made it happen. Here's the thing. God will give us a lot of things to do sometimes. He'll give us commands. And we can choose one of two ways. We can choose the easy way, just letting God accomplish what he wants to. Or we can resist him until he forces it to happen. That's what he had to do here. Very rarely does God intervene. But he had to do that here. Proverbs 16:9 says, a man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. God knows what we're thinking. We have our own plans, but God is the one that's in control. And there's not a lot of stuff in life that you can trust. Your favorite jeans will rip a hole in them one day, you know. Your skateboard, the wheel will pop off. One day your hair will fall out, I'm sorry to say that, or it'll go gray or something, right? Everything that you like or trust in will often break. It'll let you down. Here's one guarantee. Sin will always lead to a big mess with a bunch of confusion. Always. That's where sin takes us. Satan plus sin plus a selfish heart equals a recipe for disaster. When God sees selfishness in us, he will attack and it will result in disaster. Because he doesn't care who you are. He doesn't care if you're a toddler or a teenager or a skateboarder or a soccer player, guy, girl, friendly, friendless. He wants to ruin your life. It doesn't matter who you are or what you've done or how good you are or bad you are. It doesn't matter. Satan wants to destroy you and have you turn your back on God. But you have the choice to either give in or get out. The rest of chapter 11, we won't read it, but it's Shem's descendants. And you'll see the continued blessing on Shem and his family. Because eventually, as we'll start studying next week, Abraham, the father of faith, came from the family of Shem. And eventually, through that same family, came Jesus Christ himself. What a blessing. Now, I brought this bobblehead doll with me this morning. This is Dean Traynor, the Isotopes manager. I got it from the last Isotopes game I went to. And I was in my office studying the other day, and Dean was staring back at me, you know, with his little bobbly head. Yeah, like that. And I thought, you know, a lot of times when it comes to sin, we're a lot like these little bobblehead dolls, all right? And you're like, that's weird. I don't have a spring in my neck. How am I like that? Let me show you. Because bobblehead dolls are great because, you know, one thing I like about them is that they'll tell you anything that you want to hear, you know? They'll agree with you at any time. Hey, Dean, am I good looking? That's what I thought. That's what I thought. He told me I was, you know? That really makes me feel good. Thanks, buddy. Hey, Dean, am I going to probably win the lottery if I were to try to play? Yeah, that's what I thought. Oh yeah, definitely. That's a definite. That's a definite right there, okay? Let's see. Should I worry about doing my homework tonight? Ah, that's good. Hey, Dean said I didn't have to, you know? He'll say whatever you want, right? Wherever, whatever you want him to do. He'll agree with it. He'll disagree. Whatever you want him to say. And when it comes to temptation, a lot of us are very similar to that. Because we'll go to school, and at church it's great. We have these plans, and we're like, oh man, you know, I need to do this, or I should live differently here. We get to school, and we're just like the little bobblehead Dean Trainer, all right? And we get there, and our friends ask us to do something that we know we shouldn't do. And we're just like, okay, sounds good. We bobble our heads, right? And we start agreeing with them. We start to disagree with the people that we know are right because it's easier. We make more friends when we have a little more fun right now, you know? Oh, it's no big deal. I'll ask for forgiveness later, whatever it may be. But we give in to temptation so easily. We've learned for weeks now about people who let the disguise of sin fool them. And this morning I challenge you to learn a lesson from them. To quit letting this disguise fool you, because God not only is serious about his love, but we've seen that God is serious about his judgment as well. Maybe this morning you have a fear of something. Maybe you're afraid of big consequences because of the decisions you've made, or the tendency to have bad cravings in your heart, to want this or to want that when you know you shouldn't. Or maybe you're just really confused. You have a bunch of confusion in your life because of this big mess of sin that you've gotten yourself into. Today is the day to turn it around. Today is the day to let God cleanse you of all of that and to turn it around. And to trust God right now that he'll take you to heaven. And if you need to do that this morning, please don't leave without talking to me. Without talking to a leader. We want to pray for you. We want you to be so sure that if you were to die today, you would go to heaven. Because if there's a doubt, that's a dangerous place to be. That's one thing I love about trusting Jesus, is I never have a doubt. I've never had to worry, oh man, I wasn't very good today. I don't know if Jesus came back, I don't know if he'd let me go to heaven. I've never had to worry that, because Jesus paid the price for me to get there. And if you need Jesus to pay the price for you today, please don't leave without talking to me. Learn from these people and don't let sin fool you with its disguise. Let's pray. God, you're so good to us. And we recognize that you love us, but also you judge and you punish. Lord, thank you for remaining faithful even when we are faithless. Help us to be men and women like Noah, who although he had his faults, like we read today, overall was a man of faith. God, help us to be like Shem and Japheth, who covered up their father's sin, and didn't disrespect, didn't gossip, resisted the temptation, and did their best to help him through it. Lord, thank you so much that you love us and you paid the price for us to go to heaven. We pray that you would help us to put our trust in you completely. And if there's anyone in this room this morning, Lord, that doesn't have a relationship with you, God, I pray that this morning that would change. And they wouldn't leave without talking to a leader that we could point them the way to heaven. In your name we pray. Amen. Thank you guys so much for coming. You guys have a great day. And if you need to talk to anybody, let us know.